Greetings and salutations. Welcome to the Mac Observer's Daily Observations Podcast. It is Friday, July 10th. This, like it or not, is 2020. I am your host, Kelly Gamott. With me today, I have Charlotte Henry. Hi, Charlotte.
You didn't warn me that was going to be the start. Every time we do this show and you say it's 2020, I'm like, yep, still.
Even still, yeah.
Mm. Yeah. Hi. Happy Friday.
Since it's just you and I today, Charlotte, we're gonna do Security Friday one way or another.
We're doing Security Friday. Hi, it's Security Friday. I'm Andrew Orr.
All right.
Thank you. That's my impression on my much loved colleague. That's the am I in the right spirit for the show now?
I think so. Yeah. Hi, Andrew.
Cool. Let's do it.
Then let's talk about how this morning, your time, the internet broke.
Yeah. Well, no, the thing is, it wasn't the internet. It was specifically iPhones and even more specifically apps on iOS 13.
Okay.
So there was a whole host of popular apps. We're talking things on the scale of Spotify, Waze, Tinder, I think TikTok, big. Mm-hmm. Apps that just fell down. I sort of turned on Twitter and saw loads of different things trending. I was like, uh-oh, what's happened? And it turned out, it looks like Facebook kind of broke everything. A Facebook SDK, I think it's to do with logging into Facebook. Basically, there seemed to be a code problem that meant a load of apps crashed when you tried to start them in iOS 13. As I say, it was things like Spotify, Waze, really big name things that people use every day and really notice when they don't work.
Yeah.
Spotify on Twitter acknowledged a problem. I think some of the others, there was games broke as well. So it was a big problem. But at the time we're recording this show, they seem to have all been fixed and working. Now, I don't know if that's a short-term fix that the third-party apps have made themselves.
Sure.
Or if that's some new code that, assuming what people think is right and that it was a Facebook-based problem, which has happened before. I think there was an issue in May, wasn't there, where a similar type of thing happened?
Yeah, I think so, yeah.
So assuming that is the issue, we don't know at this stage if it's the individual apps that just fix themselves, developers in those companies did a little bit of something to just get the show on the road again, and then they'll deal with the Facebook issue at another point, or if Facebook itself fixed the code that was causing a problem.
Yeah.
Either way, I didn't have to update anything, and those apps, as I'm talking to you, seem to be working. I'm just loading up Waze now, and that it seems to, seems to be back working again. But it poses interesting questions about third-party logins, third-party APIs and code, and the power of, having those companies, such powerful companies, need you to sign into third-party things.
Yeah.
Now, I mean, of course, sign in with Apple could in theory be badly coded and break, or, bit of iOS 13 could do that. But it seems to me that like a third, having an extra thing to get you to sign in to a third-party app on another platform, there's a lot of different bits that can go wrong there, it seems to, from my non-developer viewpoint.
When there's a number of moving parts, like it's something that's on iOS, it's an app from someone else that is on iOS and you're using login through Facebook. There are a large number of moving parts within all of those transactions that could cause that to go wrong.
Yeah, or any, some kind of Facebook code. I think in the case of Spotify, it might have been login. Right. I don't log in to, say, Waze with Facebook because it's a Google app.
Yeah.
But anyway, you certainly can use those sign in with Facebook type facilities and some of the other apps I named. So anyway, yeah, it it poses a lot of questions. It got fixed pretty quickly, but people were very unhappy when it was not being fixed.
Oh, certainly. And this is just another part of the reason this becomes a Security Friday situation, is because this is another reminder of, like, password managers are great. And part of the reason they're great is because if something like login with Facebook gets hosed, like, you're not stuck, right? So
yeah, and also you don't have to use it. You can have your own.
Yeah. That's I think the part that's the most helpful, at least with that one. So there's one practical tick that comes out of this, and again, this is one of those things, like, there's not a particular flavor of password manager that you need to be using, as long as you have one. So whether it's iCloud Keychain, which you get sort of for free because it's a built-in piece of iOS and macOS, or whether you're using Dashlane or FastPass or 1Password or someone that I have not listed here, like, as long as it's not the XYZ section of your address book, then we're good. please.
Or your birthday.
Yeah, and or as long as you're like, yeah, I only have 1Password. It's my birthday, you know. But it's backwards. That's not helpful.
Don't do that.
So we have another one that's going around that is another security issue, and that is a phishing scam related to Microsoft.
Yeah, early this week, July 7th, Microsoft posted a blog that it was taking legal action against a COVID-19 related cybercrime. It was basically a massive phishing scam that affected users with Microsoft accounts, which is, you know, that can affect Apple and, you know, device users and non-Apple mm-hmm. device users, you know. It affected customers in 62 countries around the world, and eventually Microsoft was able to seize control of some of the key domains in the criminal infrastructure, and so that they can't conduct those cyber attacks anymore. Mm-hmm. The company said apparently its digital crimes unit first observed the issue back in December 2019. So it's obviously a big deal because it's Microsoft, and a lot of people have Microsoft accounts and use Microsoft software and could have mm-hmm. been targeted by this. The other thing it made me want to kind of flag up and thought we should spend a couple of minutes discussing is this issue around online fraud and scams around COVID-19.
Yeah.
Now, I'm sure there's been comment about it in the US. There's definitely been stuff here in the UK. Mm-hmm. Around kind of phishing scams, and because we're obviously conducting a lot more transactions in person and over the phone and online than we are doing in person, I should say. And so there's obviously opportunities for fraud, particularly when people are a bit worried about money and all those kind of things. So it was more, this was one particular scam that attacked Microsoft customers, but there are different things floating around, and you should obviously, as ever, be aware of various things when you're conducting transactions online, or, you know, being asked to enter passwords or give account details online and all those things, because there are people who are, it sounds unbelievable to say, but there are people who are trying to use a pandemic to conduct those kind of attacks. Mm-hmm. So, you know, there were, if you know, things like, if it seems too good to be true, if it's a bit random, you're being contacted out of the blue, if you're, you know, there are, we said to a blue in the face, banks don't tend to ask you for your bank details. Mm-hmm. Like, just be really careful the type of details you're prepared to give over the phone, like, particularly if you're contacted out of the blue, and that includes mm-hmm. by email.
Yeah, or in person. Or not in person, but I mean over the phone.
Exactly.
Yeah. Family member called me recently with exactly something like this. I don't remember what the particular account was, but it said, like, there's a problem with your account. Click here to log in. And she said, I don't think there actually is a problem, because I know a number of other people who also have, you know, whatever it was. You know, whether it was, you know, AT&T or something. You know, I know a number of other people, and I asked them about, you know, if they got this email too, and they all said no. And so, you know, it's definitely a thing where, like, the rule of thumb that I use, the thing that I try to tell people is, if there's a legitimate issue with the account that you're being alerted to in your email, then what you can do is look at the email and be advised, like, oh, it's my Chase account that I got an email about, right? You can then leave the email sitting there, go open your web browser and go to the Chase website and log in by hand. And if there's actually a problem with your account, there's usually some sort of account alert section or messages or something. And you can go there and you should see the same thing that says, like, there's been this issue and we're fixing this, and or, you know, whatever the action is that you need to take. You never have to click on a link in an email in order to get there. Or you can just call them and be like, hey, I got this email. And they'll be like, yeah, no.
But I think this is probably not for our listeners, but for listeners who maybe have older relatives who've had to be, you know, quarantined and isolated, that is good advice to give them as well, I think. That
as long as you initiate the contact.
Exactly. The likelihood of one of these companies contacting you out of the blue and asking you for, you know, very specific details is basically none. And if they do, you can go back and contact them, whatever way that contact happens.
Exactly. As long as it's up to you to initiate, like, you are the one that you go to chase.com or whatever it is and log in with your login information, or you go to appleid.apple.com and go reset your password because, you know, you've got some sketchy looking email about it. Like, as long as it's up to you, as long as you're the one that calls, or you're the one that goes, you go to the website and you fill in your authenticated information on the website that you know is legit instead of clicking on one of these links. Yeah. That's the bit that's important. So
certainly is.
Absolutely. And always be suspicious of those. And, you know, if it is something that looks a little iffy, then, you know, don't feel the least bit bad about deleting the message and then just go log into the site and take a look, you know, the way you normally do.
And my general rule of thumb, and I don't, you know, can take it or leave it, is if it's really an issue, the organization that needs your details and information and needs you to take some action will contact you in another way at another point.
Yeah, it's not going to be a random email or something. Yeah.
If it's important, the organization to whom it is important will make sure you know.
Exactly. Yeah. That's why you tend to get a letter in the mail from the credit card company.
Right. But and also this is also worth, you know, when you're, you know, shopping online for things like, you know, there's been things about fake masks and hand sanitizer stuff. It's just important in the kind of current environment. Security is not just about long passwords and VPNs.
Right. Because online the social security. Engineering piece is a huge piece of that as well. So, So we're going to spend a little bit of time, the rest of today's show, but it's not all that long, talking about the App Store. Because the App Store is 12 today. The App Store launched in July of 2008. And the reason that this is notable to me is because the first iPhone was released in June of 2007. And the next, the iPhone 3G, the second iteration of iPhone, was the one that came out in the summer of 2008. And it sort of came out in conjunction with the release of the App Store. And the iPhone 3G was my first iPhone. Because I had, there was a whole thing. I was under contract until well after they were available. And then, you know, who in their right mind pays $600 for a phone and all of that. So I kind of had to wait for mine. It was a very different time. I waited in a line with a bunch of other people in the basement of Pioneer Place here in Portland. And I waited with a number of people from an iPhone development shop called Small Society. And I waited with them. I waited with in line, and because I am casually acquainted with some of those folks, there were people from Panic Software that were all in line waiting for new phones. And the thing that I remember about it was Mr. Kelly being very concerned because, it was a different time. He was still a Windows user at that point. and was wondering how this phone was going to work in conjunction with all of the stuff that he, all of his gear and all of his electronics, because he had a Windows machine, and you know, how was this going to work with his Windows computer, and how was email going to happen, and all these kind of things, because neither of us had had a smartphone prior to this. So there was a point where I wasn't sure if he even wanted one. He was kind of on the fence. And so what I remember about this particular iPhone launch was there being a couple of people ahead of me to get into the store. And I called him, and it was the last call I ever made from that little Motorola phone that I had. And I called him up and said, I'm in line. I said, there are two people ahead of me in line at the Apple store, and I need to know how many phones I'm getting. And his reaction was, two, I guess. And I said, okay. So
yeah, I mean, because I remember we did, it was a few weeks ago now, you, Dave, and I discussed the 13th birthday of the original iPhone, which came out 13 years ago. I mean, a few weeks ago, we discussed it. And obviously, the iPhone was... you know, the original iPhone was a big deal. But as you're rightly pointing out, to me, the game changer seemed to be the creation of this ecosystem in which the App Store is central, in which you can have software which you can be fairly certain is safe because it's gone through, you know, a vetting process from Apple. It will work on your device. You know, it's a couple of clicks to download it. And that was a huge difference and
massive.
You know, Apple made a point when it, you know, Apple always makes a point about the ecosystem, the App Store it has created, and the amount of the businesses that have been created because the App Store exists, and the income people have generated because the App Store exists.
Yeah.
And that isn't to be sniffed at. And I know people, you know, there's been rows we've discussed on this show about the 30% cut that Apple takes after a certain point on apps. There's issue, you know, the way Apple has products that also compete with stuff on the app. So there's issues. No one's pretending it's not. But but also you can't dismiss the ecosystem, the businesses, the kind of the economy that this creation has facilitated.
Well, and I think another piece of it is the technology. So the footnote to the story that I just told you about Mr. Kelly's iPhone is that he actually had two Windows machines at that time. He had a desktop machine that was kind of aging, and he had this more recent laptop, and the RAM went, and so his desktop computer was in pieces because he was in the process of upgrading something in it. So it was kind of out of commission and like waiting for a part. It wasn't like it was something that could just be assembled and used in the short term. Like something had gone bad in it, and we were waiting in the mail for a new hard drive or something to show up. And then the RAM went bad in his laptop. And so he had zero computer, like, as of Friday night when I brought this phone home. Like, as of Friday night, he turned on his laptop, and it gave, like, blue... It did nothing but blue screen because the RAM... There was something wrong with the RAM or something in it. So I handed him his phone and helped him walk through the process of getting everything set up. And then on Sunday night, he looked at me and said, I spent all weekend without a computer, but I had my phone, and I did everything I needed to do with my phone.
And that is in part just a general smartphone thing, but that is also quite a App Store, iOS, whatever we were calling it at that point, specific thing, because it made specialized, you know, it was a place for specialized versions of the software. I'm looking at my phone now, and obviously there's
very little stock that I use on my phone personally.
You know, there is,
well, even without the App Store, like,
difference.
We set up his email, he was able to check his email. We set up, you know, he was able to look things up in Safari. This was a basic smartphone thing, but he was, you know, like I said, he was not sold on it. You know, his reaction when I asked if he wanted one was, you know, two, I guess. You know, he wasn't jazzed about it. And we went from that to 2 years later, you know, finally out from under contract. you know, it was time to order the iPhone 4, and I didn't realize this at the time, and he set an alarm, and he got up at like 4:45 a.m. and I woke up to him yelling at his computer, AT&T, why won't you let me give you money? And some other choice words that I will not quote, because he was set an alarm to get up early to get a newer iteration of this phone that he loved. And I think the App Store is a massive part of that. Because you could take the technology that Apple gave you and turn it into the thing that you wanted it to be. So
yeah, and
it can be a camera, it can be a video production machine, it can be a podcast production machine, it can be a game playing machine. You know, it can be your, you know, business communication device, like whatever it is that you want, or maybe you need it to be all of those things, and whatever thing it is that you want it to be, it can do.
I was looking through that 10-year press release that Apple put out, and it mm-hmm. named some of the first apps there, and I think they're quite telling. I think it's quite a telling way kind of to bring the conversation to an end, actually, in that some of them, they were MLB at Bat, among
yes.
It was the New York Times. Mm-hmm. It was eBay. There was a couple I never can't pretend I'd heard of. There was something called Tap Tap Revenge. Yes. Something called Trism. Games?
Those two are games. Yes. I didn't play a lot of Trism. I played and a whole lot of Tap Tap Revenge. Yeah.
Right. So the point of these things, it seemed to me, that tells you quite a lot about the ecosystem that was first there. Apple provided a way for people to, you know, you could read the newspaper in a properly formatted way mm-hmm. on your phone.
On a mobile device.
It wasn't just, you know, going onto the website and hoping the page looked okay. It was, right. you know, it's a proper, yeah. you could watch baseball mm-hmm. and baseball highlights on your phone properly. Mm-hmm. And that's what's really important. It proved to be a game changer. So happy 12th birthday.
Yeah. One of the first apps I downloaded for my phone, because they had added the gyroscopes to it. So like the relative position of your phone and things. And like I downloaded Evernote, I think was the first app that I downloaded on my 3G. And right behind it, because I downloaded like kind of a handful of apps at the same time when I first got my phone. So I remember downloading Evernote, and I downloaded an app called Lightsaber, which you could use. You could set the color of your lightsaber, set the hilt of your lightsaber, and it would show up on your screen. And then when you waved your phone around, it would make the noise.
Of course, you downloaded this app.
Yes,
sure.
And then you tap it against your hand, and you know, make you know.
No, lightsaber. But this was the thing. Crashing people noises. Suddenly realized they wanted. You know, you could pay, people would pay 99 cents for that, or, you know,
oh, yes.
a decent alarm clock or a weather. And anyway, yeah.
Yeah. And it was like weather apps. I remember being another thing that people got into very quickly. Yeah. It's good stuff. So, yeah. And I think the App Store is at least as monumental as the phone itself, because the phone itself isn't 100%. That interesting without the store.
100%. For me, the App Store is what makes the phone.
Absolutely. I agree.
Certainly at that point when the cat, you know, now we've got the cameras, which take things to a new level. But yes, certainly at that point.
Yes. I'm with you on that 100%. So that's going to do it for us. I would like to hear your memories about the App Store. If you still remember what the first app is that you downloaded, definitely let us know. I think there was another one in there that was, it was a little block from Super Mario Brothers. And you could, if you put it in your pocket and jumped, or if you, you know, pretended like you were jumping with your phone, it would make the little Mario jumpy noise. I remember that one because it was just a neat thing to get to kind of show off. And Midomi, which was the thing there was before, Soundhound before I think Shazam bought them. You could hold your phone out and go, who sings that song? And it would tell you, which was a revolutionary thing in 2008. So. Yeah, a lot of fun. Anyway, thank you so much, Charlotte, for joining me today for Security Friday. I appreciate your...
no problem, Kelly.
I appreciate your efforts there. Yes.
My efforts to be Andrew.
I appreciate your Andrew-shaped efforts on that front.
I could never be Andrew.
No one can.
He'll be
a full-time gig for him, you know.
Right. Andrew,
so.
But have a lovely weekend.
You as well. And I'm your host, Kelly Gamont. I will talk to all of you on Monday. Have an excellent weekend. Be excellent to each other, and let's be careful out there.